Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can log on to steinershow.org, click on their banner, MeQ's banner, all the information is there. It is a bank, but it's also a credit union, which means it belongs to you. So right now we're talking about the elections that happened yesterday, which may have been the lowest turnout of any election in Baltimore's history. And we'll look at that, and we'll look at the one upset that took place, an almost upset that took place. But the rest was what you thought, that all the creative pundits in our world, including myself, said was going to happen. And it's a terrible thing that that's what happened, I think, in that not that the mayor won, but in that that's so predictable in a community like this and in many communities around the country. But why is that? We are joined here today. Shanae Williams is in studio, Baltimore Bureau reporter for the Afro-American newspaper. Shanae, welcome to the show for the first time. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Joining us by phone, Mark Reuter, blogger at the Baltimore Brew, and he's been reporting and writing on Baltimore since 1970. I can't stand to call you a blogger, Mark. I mean, you're a journalist, not a blogger.
Yeah, we're using this this new form. a new journalist.
And right, blogging journalist.
Julie but a veteran one, too. I can hit the streets as well as most of them.
Yes, you can. Julie Sharper's with us, Baltimore Sun City Hall reporter. Julie, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Mark.
And Julie's making her way over to the studio, stuck in traffic, which she'll be here in a few minutes. And Charles Robinson, Maryland State reporter for the Maryland Public Television, is with us as well. Charles, welcome. Good to have you with us, man.
Hey, thanks a whole lot, Mark.
So this is we all thought there was going to be a low turnout. I mean, people predicted this low turnout. But I'd like to kind of talk about this a bit, and I also want to invite our listeners to join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I'm curious why you voted, or even more curious about why you didn't vote, and what made you stay home, what made you think it didn't make any difference, or that it was useless, or it was better just to hang out with your friends than push a button. So what do you think? 410-319-8888. And Julie, let me start with you. I mean, let's go around the table with this. I'm just your analysis about why you think this turnout was so low.
Well, I think what we saw in this election is a general sense of apathy about all of the candidates. You go to the polls because you want to vote for someone, because you're very excited to cast your ballot for this candidate. And I think in many of the cases, voters were not excited about any of the candidates. Obviously, they were most excited about Rawlings Blake, since she got 52% of the vote. But I think that she failed to inspire excitement among other voters. And I think that her challengers also failed to inspire that level of excitement.
Mark Reuter.
What do I think about the voter turnout?
Yeah, you wrote about it in the
We wrote a piece also about it in the Brew today, and as part of seven lessons about the election. And we said that really this election was a triumph of a fellow called status S quo. And we mean by that the election wound up, for lots of reasons, just being a reiteration of what the present political power is in the city. It certainly can't be called a mandate, because if you do the math, the incumbent mayor, who won by far the most votes, when you do the math, she winds up with a little over 10% of the registered Democratic voters in the city. So again, you know, there was just a huge voter turnout. I agree with Julie. We both observed this. There just was not much excitement, really, even any knowledge. I think many people don't know who the other candidates were. For around 2 minutes, there was some excitement, at least in political circles, about the lower property tax. That was pretty much snuffed out pretty quickly, largely by City Hall, and we kind of then went back into this torpor that we've seemed to be in for the last 8 months.
Shanae.
Well, I mean, I agree. I felt like if people were excited about a particular candidate, they just assumed that their candidate wouldn't win. So Rawlingsbake is going to win. So what's the point of me even bothering? I think when we, you know, the pundits and the endorsements, I think that really has an impact on people. So if they feel like their candidate has no chance, then okay, what's the point of me even going out there? I think that also plays a big role in it.
Charles.
The apathy in Baltimore City has basically come to a crescendo in the sense that, you know, when you have multiple candidates challenging the status quo, there is a kind of like, well, who else is there? And I kept thinking that maybe there was part of the electorate that was that kept asking, who else is there? And there was nobody else there other than what I think Mr. Status Quo is. I think that's what the gentleman from Baltimore Brew suggested.
Right.
And was, and the other part of that is that this apathy seems to coincide with non-presidential years. If you look at the results from the last presidential year, I understand that the number of new registered voters increased. So you get an excitement. Biggest problem is that these elections happen like every year, and it's kind of like hard to get people excited about something that's in a non-presidential year. And I know that the folks who set up the election cycle set it up so that money-wise, you if you had to raise money, you wouldn't have to raise money in a presidential year because that's where most of the money goes from.
Let me open the phones early here and get folks to join us and continue the roundtable with our four journalists here examining what happened yesterday. And we do want to come back to these issues of why there seems to be hopelessness, which I'll raise, and this off-year election and why it's so hard to get it through the state legislature to allow Baltimore's elections to take place in the same year that the other general elections take place in the state of Maryland. 410-319-8888. Carla, you're on the air. Hi, Carla. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much. And another issue is the fact that the primaries are closed. That's been my issue, is that it's closed primaries, so those of us who are astute enough to pay attention to what's going on and are disgusted with the way that the city operates, we cannot get out and vote until the general, and we basically are voting for the lesser of two evils by then because of the closed primaries. And I'll take... your response off the air. Thank you very much.
We've heard a lot about the closed primary issue. People raise it all the time. And a number of people raised it last night about why they didn't vote. They're registered independent or they're not, you know, and so they can't get into the Democratic primary. And that there are a lot of people, when I asked the mayor this question and she kind of sloughed it off saying it was unimportant, it was just something that you people on in the news talk about on radio, but it doesn't make, you know, it has no relevance. But I think it does have relevance. Which is an idea of open primaries and the idea of having runoffs between the top two vote getters if someone didn't get 50%, something that may spur a percentage more people to become involved in the process because it is it's otherwise I think it's very alienating. People think that there's no power at all. I'm just curious what you all think about that. Let's start this round with Mark.
Well, I think that this is part of this broader problem that we have been, Baltimore in particular and Maryland more general has been a one-party city for close to 50 years. McKeldin, I believe the last time there was a Republican one mayor was McKeldin in the early 60s.
Theodore McKeldin, yep.
And McKeldin was an exception. He actually... was a local boy and kind of transcended political party. So he was an exception to a rule of, but with having for several decades, with many decades now, maybe and maybe two generations, a one-party system, this creates this exclusionary sort of club-like atmosphere, which has been part of Baltimore for years with the ward and the Democratic parties that had slates and stuff. While the days of the political bosses are gone now, the remnants of that, the exclusionary policies remain. Clearly, having open primaries, having the race scheduled in a presidential year, reforming campaign laws, which the legislature resists, and Maryland is one of the most loophole-ridden campaign has one of the most loophole-ridden campaign laws in the country. All contribute to the sense that this is insider ball. And our investigation of the campaign contributors is that it is very insider ball. There are some people who are keenly interested in the election,
mm-hmm.
but we're dealing with a small handful, most of them with direct ties, monetary ties, contract ties with the city. And most of the city, you know, I think feels that they're shut out of this, and their response is, I'm not going to participate. I'm going to drop out.
Shanae?
Well, I definitely agree. I feel like the amount of residents who consider themselves to be independent or more center, I definitely think that's growing with the people of my generation. But realistically, are we in the media going to cover these independents? Since this is such a Democratic-driven city, I just wonder if it would even make a difference, if they would even get the coverage and get out there, even if they are on the ballot.
Julie Sharper?
Well, I think you have to look at what sort of incentive is there for the politicians to change these laws and to reform these laws. I mean, we can... You know, it's all well and good for us to say that it would make sense to make those changes, but if changing those laws would actually weaken their political power or change their ability to win a race, why would they do it? I think it's kind of a pipe dream to expect that we'll see those kinds of changes.
And maybe what you just said, Julie, if it is a pipe dream, is one of the reasons people stay home. Because they feel there's no way to affect change through the ballot box.
I think that that's what a lot of our apathy stems from. And in talking to political scientists, I think it's important to note that they say that there's really sort of a national trend in
yes.
political apathy.
Yes.
And picking up over the last decade, certainly. We can't beat up on Baltimore too much here, because I think this is something that's really happening in municipal elections all around the country.
I agree. I don't intend to beat up on Baltimore or its citizens, but just to kind of analyze this and why this is happening. And before we go back to Charles Robinson, let me go back to the citizens and see what they're saying. And Michael in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hey, Michael, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah.
Try that again.
Any of the candidates, but...
Okay, is all right? We'll try him again? Michael, try to call back, and we'll get you on another line, see if that works better. Let's go to Dave in Guilford. You're on the air.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, Dave. Welcome.
I don't like the conversation because everybody sounds as bored as the voters. I mean, it's not that the people see no way to change things. It's just that they're lazy. I mean, you listen to Cornel West on Democracy Now! On Attica.
Yeah.
I mean, Stephanie went to the same college as me, and so, of course, I had to support her. But how do we invite passionate people who are also intelligent to run for office? Because they ain't running.
Mark, can I chime in here?
Please, Charles Robinson, go ahead.
Well, first and foremost, let me say that the reason why I think we don't have competitive elections is because we have a number of people who run. Who some are tested, some have run for office before. But when you want to kind of change gears, you need a single candidate. In the mayor's race, there were five people who were running for that race. And don't get me wrong, I think it's a wonderful idea that every individual citizens can run. But let me just make sure everybody understands this. Well, we're dealing with a $1 billion budget, and a lot of these people haven't even dealt with $10,000 or $100,000 budgets and how to balance them. But when you get back to this whole idea, the last time we had a competitive primary, we got to go all the way back to when William Donald Schaefer was challenged by Billy Murphy. Okay.
That wasn't competitive. It was a slaughter. I was in it.
Right. And it might not have been competitive, but it's when people were really engaged in the primary process.
Well, you might say that about the race that put Martin O'Malley in office. It was people were engaged in that process as well.
Right. But think about this. When you remember that in the race that we got Martin O'Malley, that there were three candidates.
Right.
There weren't a lot of fringe candidates. And when I say fringe, I mean, you look at the number of people that voted for Wilton Wilson. God bless him. 215. Sorry, he shouldn't have been in this race.
Well, wait, but you can't. But is it. But.
And don't get me wrong. I think everybody should have a right to run.
Right.
But you know what? To have him on a debate and trying to answer questions is not productive. I'm sorry. We've got to either do one of two things. We've either got to say, okay, you know, if you can't raise X amount of dollars and get X amount of people to say they're going to vote for you, sorry, you can't participate in the high level stuff. If you want to participate in the stuff with city council and so forth, fine, go do that. But this is a big deal. This is a big city. This is not the community organizer kind of city. This is where someone's got to figure out how to balance a $1 billion budget.
Well, let me ask our other journalists to jump in here before we go back to the phones. And Charlie, you're the next caller up, so hold on. But I don't know. I don't know if that's the issue. Julie Sharper, that too many people are running. I think some of the issues is money. I think Mark Reuter raised the issue of money and all the money in the campaign. But this is, I think this has a great deal more to do, and even trickles down from the White House with kind of a lack of hope that people have had for a long time. Julie dropped because she's supposed to be coming in the door. So, I mean, let's go to Mark.
Well, I think that's true. I think that, you know, we're living in times that while there's radical economic change, radical, and fairly radical social change, technological change, there is a great fear of political change that it would be worse. I believe that the mayor really won the election, won the vote she won, because she represented continuity. I think Baltimoreans were tired. You know, we went through the Sheila Dixon problems. Rollins Blake has been a steady mayor. The rap has been that she's been steady but unimaginative. Voters right now, I think, are so discouraged with what politicians can do for them,
right,
that they would rather have unimaginative than a leap of faith that could turn out to be a disaster in a very difficult economic time. That said, I think that they're hungering for leadership. And what's fascinating now is that on every level of government, it seems now, you can be the president in the White House, you could be the mayor in Baltimore, but when it comes to these problems people are interested in, joblessness, competitiveness, the threat of China, isn't it amazing? Not a single of these powerful people can really do anything. They all seem stuck.
Right.
They can't do anything.
I
think that is what breeds this cynicism. And that translates into this, you know, lack of voting, even though, you know, it's remarkable. 50 years ago, you know, people died to win citizens the right to vote in this country.
Right.
And, you know, now you can't even give it away.
As you wrote in the Brew Today. And that's cynicism. And then we'll go to Charlie here. That's cynicism. I'm very curious, Sinead, which you comment you made earlier about your generation.
Mm-hmm.
You're in your 20s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So a young reporter out there, yes, beating the bushes, telling the stories. So what about your generation? What is the sense among your peer group about why people voted or not voted in this election and what people are saying to you?
Well, let's talk with my friends. Half my friends, they don't care. They don't understand how what a politician is doing in City Hall affects them in any way. So I think that, you know, candidates can maybe do a better job of just relaying that, how the decisions that they make are really having an impact on their everyday lives. And the other half live in Baltimore County, but work in the city. You know, and then It's just the same. It's just the same thing.
Is there a cynicism about politics among your peer group?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But did your peer group go off and like droves to vote for Barack Obama?
You know, and they did, and so I guess that goes to show that they don't. There aren't any candidates that really excite them this time. Yes.
And I think part of it is this is that the lack of hope has kind of Ronald Reagan's trickle down theory, but it's trickled down. Charles Robinson to masses of people who are just kind of rose up to put this man in the White House, and I think it has affected the political psyche around the country and elections all over America, where people are just going, but why am I voting?
Right. Well, but I think the other part of that is that this excitement factor that weighed in the last campaign when we had the Barack Obama phenomenon, we can call it that, and I think that's fair enough to say, is that it doesn't translate down. You know, they often talk about coattails. Well, those coattails only last so long. And then you got to get to like, minutia. And, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, I heard a lot of people talking about in this race about cutting property taxes. Well, if I don't own property in this city, property taxes mean nothing to me.
Well, you remember, except one of the candidates, they all had interesting things to say about property taxes, but we didn't listen to a lot of it, I think. And I think that one of the candidates, Jody Landers, was saying that if you're a renter, he reminded voters over and over again, and whether you want to vote for Jody Landers or not vote for him, that wasn't the question. Just some of the things each one of these people said made sense to me. He said, if you're a renter, you are paying property taxes. The reason your rent is as high as it is because you're paying the landlord's property taxes. You are paying those taxes as
a
renter.
But it didn't resonate.
It didn't resonate. Clearly.
You know, and if you ask Sinead's peer group, they would say, why? Why do I need to worry about property taxes? And that's part of it.
Can't even afford to buy a house.
Exactly.
Right. And then the other part of it, there are like four distinct voter groups in this city. There are people who vote every time. They're a little older. They're in their 50s plus. And they know, I got to go to the polls. I got to vote. Okay. Then there is what I call the transient class. This is a class of folks who have moved to Baltimore, who can't figure out, where do I vote? Okay. And it's kind of like, you know, right now it's based in Federal Hill. It's in Canton. It's in the new and upcoming areas. And it's the Belvedere Square kind of area. Okay. Those folks are going, I don't even really know if I should vote or not. And then, of course, there's the apathetic group that goes, you know what? I got to go to work. I ain't got time to deal with this. And a lot of people try and reach that group, where in reality it's this new transient group, I think, is the one that's starting to turn elections. And we can look at what happened with Greg Bernstein.
Well, especially Bill Ferguson's race in the last election, the reason he could throw Della out was that population.
Right. And so the traditional groups that have put people over the top, i.e. black women, they're the consistent voters. It's the Roland Park and the Homeland folks. They're consistent voters. So that's – and what this mayor did was she sewed together these desperate groups.
Desperate groups, yeah.
That would not have any mutual benefit other than I don't know what what happens beyond the status quo, but I actually prefer the status quo than something I don't know.
Let me get another caller in here. We'll go back to Mark and Sinead as well. Mark Reuter is a journalist with the Baltimore Brew, a great online paper. Sinead Williams, Baltimore Bureau reporter for the Afro-American. He's Charles Robinson, you just heard. Maryland State reporter for Maryland Public Television. Julie Sharp will be joining us again in a minute. She's a Baltimore Sun City Hall reporter. But here's what it is. It's 5:28, so let's take a break now. We'll come right back from this break and go to Charlie and West Side. And Maria in Baltimore, and hear your thoughts as soon as we return. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And, of course, you can log on to steinershow.org, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development's banner is right there. You can get all the information online there as well. Julie Sharper is in the studio, Baltimore Sun City Hall reporter, made it through the traffic of Baltimore. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Mark.
Shanae Williams is in the studio, Baltimore Bureau reporter for Afro-American.
Hello.
Joining us by phone, Mark Reuter, who is a journalist for the Baltimore Brew and has been reporting and writing in Baltimore for over 40 years. Charles Robinson, probably over 30 years for him. He is the State House reporter, the State Maryland State reporter for Maryland Public Television. 410-319-8888. Is a number here, and Charlie on the west side, you're on the air. Charlie, you there?
I think what happened was people just got really discouraged. The political machine, the Democratic machine, kind of dictates which candidate is viable. And, you know, with the economic, you know, the money they can raise, you know, it makes it really hard. You know, you saw in 2007, the Democratic machine won a Sheila Dixon, and you had some really viable, you know, candidates who had good issues for the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for instance, you know, Joe Carter in 2007 was running, but it's hard when you go up against that political machine and the money that they can raise for them. For you know, advertising, commercials, and then, you know, and unfortunately, you know, the media as well, you know, and I think the same thing happened with the candidate Landers this year. You know, like he had some really thought-provoking ideas that would really help the city. However, it didn't really get heard, and people felt, okay, why am I gonna vote? She's gonna win anyway. And that was the consensus for a lot of people, unfortunately. So, you know, hence the, you know, lowest turnout, you know, that we had. And it's really sad because you look at programs like Eyes on the Prize and
right.
You watch, you know, ancestors and people get beaten in the head and clubbed, had dogs sticked on them.
Yep.
And, you know, and to have people stay home and not vote or participate, you know, it's really sad.
Julie Sharper, go ahead.
Charlie makes some really interesting points. You know, I think we saw really at the very beginning of the year in January when Rawlings Blake held a fundraiser on the same day that Otis Rowley had
right.
Bill Cosby in town. And she raised $800,000 in one night at that fundraiser. Rowley raised, I think, about $40,000.
Right.
And she just trounced her competitors in terms of fundraising. She raised $1.4 million just in this calendar year. And that obviously translates into a lot of television ads. I mean, it seems like every time you turn on the television or the radio in the last couple weeks, you saw Stephanie Rawlings Blake or heard her voice. She had the ability to hire lots of campaign workers out on the streets. We all got lots of literature from her. And so she was able to really rally the fundraisers around her. And then, you know, at the end of the day, too, I think that, you know, I think the media, people criticize the media a lot, and they say that we're not covering this to the same depth that we covered elections in the past. And that's true. I think, you know, if you look at most Baltimore media, it's thinned down over where it was a decade ago. But at the same time, too, in talking with residents at forums or just sort of in the street or at polls, you know, I really got the sense that they had watched the television ads and they had seen Rawlings Blake's appearances, you know, little snippets. But I didn't get the sense that a lot of voters had really taken the time to educate themselves and read the coverage in the Afro or the Brew or the Sun or the city paper that really thoroughly analyzed the issues and the records of the candidates.
Yeah, I do, not to kind of defend the media just because we're in it, but I think there was a lot out there. I think it wasn't necessarily the coverage. I think it had a great deal more to do with what you described and what the caller was alluding to, which is the money in the race.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a system that just, I mean, as you pointed out, Mark Reuter, in the investigative work that you did at the Brew, when we did a show together last, And you just pinpointed one person who was a developer, but you could go across the board with that, that there were all these LLCs that were created. You don't know who's in them, but it means that, let's say I was a very wealthy business guy, I could create 25 LLCs and give $4,000 a pop at each one to somebody, which raises my influence bar with the person who's going to be elected, as well as pushes the candidate establishment. And I think, Mark, that's what a lot of people are going, well, okay, so it's the same old, she'll be steady Eddie, let's keep it going.
I think that's true. And I think, but I think there's a couple other, one other interesting factor that I see over the years I've observed Baltimore, and that is the rise of community groups and of groups that are outside the political system.
Mm-hmm.
They've gained a lot of power. They've done a lot of positive things for the city, stabilized neighborhoods. And they, you know, have formed, you know, have been in many ways at their best a good government organization that's not part of the city government. An interesting trend is how the city government and City Hall is increasingly spending money and giving donations to community groups, and I don't know if their independence from the democratic machine politics is going to remain, and that will be an interesting phenomenon to look at. And if they lose their potence as an independent force, then I think it's going to be a sad day for Baltimore. And you know, in general, what we're talking about is with all these candidates, we have a system of a organized group of inside politicians who are groomed over the years and go from city council to city council president up to the mayorship, or kind of groomed for the job, sometimes groomed in Annapolis. And then we have this great disorganized kind of opposition that's because of the historic reasons of not having Republicans. There's no, you know, been no organized opposition. An organized opposition would start screaming and yelling about loopholes in campaign laws and stuff because it would be to their self-interest to do it, as well as they might be also maybe even a little idealistic. But until there's some organized opposition, I think we're going to see variations of the theme. And it's really ironic because look at this now. Some of the candidates won city council races with only 2,000 votes in an entire district.
Right.
You would think that
right.
a creative or even mischievous group would just go out there, pour the money, do a Bloomberg. And in New York,
we got to have the Bloomberg money.
Well, that's true. That's maybe part of it. But really, there's some real opportunities here with this low voter turnout. A small group, could win huge numbers of elections if organized and use the internet, use some new social media, attracted the young with maybe a very original
right.
platform.
Well, I mean, I'd like to see what the guests think about that, and we'll go to Maria, our next caller up. I mean, Charles, Shanae, Julie.
I think one thing that you know always strikes me is that there are no good government groups in Baltimore. We have Common Cause Maryland, but they really focus on state issues. And a lot of times, you know, you'll come across something in your reporting that really raises eyebrows, and you go out there and you're saying, okay, well, who is going to have an opinion about this? Who's going to show some opposition? And that's really hard to find those groups in Baltimore. And I think even when you look at some of the traditional advocacy groups, they've gotten quieter in recent years. I mean, even just in the 5.5 years I've been at The Sun, I feel like at one point I was getting bombarded by NAACP emails, and these days I haven't really gotten one in a long time. So who are those voices in Baltimore
right.
that are sticking up and are saying, wait a second, we have an issue with the way that city government is going, or we have questions about how city government are going?
I mean, Charles Robinson, I think this is a part of the crux of the issue. And I think what Julie was saying, what Mark said earlier, that you could make a change. I mean, it takes organizing on the ground. You had groups like Acorn. Acorn's gone. They were destroyed. Sometimes internally, I think it was much more external than internal, but they were destroyed. Mm-hmm. They knew how to organize from the bottom up. But you can't win. A number of people who are running for office I was just talking to, and the question I had for them all, some of the younger people running for city council, was, are you registering people to vote? Do you have their names written down? Do you know how to knock on their door the day of the election and get them out of the house to put them to vote? You have to organize to win. You just can't run a campaign and hope, because you sound nice, that someone's going to vote for you.
Right. And the one group that still has some clout is BILD, which is the Alliance of Pastors in the city.
You think they still have clout?
Well,
I'm not so sure they do.
This way, I want to remind you of the big controversy that happened with BILD, that they endorsed the mayor. And it was Senator Pugh who said, wait a minute, that's not the way it's supposed to work. And so, yeah, they threw their weight behind it.
That was the interdenominational, what is it?
Yeah, I was actually there when that happened. That was the interdenominational ministerial alliance.
Yeah,
and there's some confusion with BILD because Bishop Miles, who currently heads BILD, formerly headed the IMA.
Right.
But yeah, so Senator Pugh... in this one of the striking moments of the campaign, waltzed into this sleepy endorsement in a church hall and said, wait a second, you have just demolished years of protocol in which you've always held a forum and invited all of the candidates and interviewed all of the candidates.
Right, and that's a group that still has somewhat clout because of the number of black churches in the city. What's interesting to me is, I think Shanae hit it on the head when she says, a lot of those folks now live in Baltimore County. And for a long time, some people would maintain their city residence in order to vote in city elections, but now have said, wait a minute, that's not where I live. I need to turn my attention to that. Then the other group that often gets underreported is the number of convicted felons who can get their voting rights back but have not exercised that right. Unfortunately, we do have a large number of felons who are coming back into the city, who live in the city, and are basically a non-factor in city elections. And these desperate groups, as I said once before, were at least, some of them were sewn together. I mean, I always, could Otis Rowley be able to win Clark Heights? Well, he may have won Lower Park Heights, but I don't think he could have won Park Heights, Jewish Park Heights. And see, those are the...
I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not sure I agree with that at all, Charles.
I may be wrong, but the deal is that you got to sew together groups that would not normally talk to each other.
Well, I think organizing is a key to anybody winning in these races. Before I turn back to other guests, let me go to the phones and we'll start off with Shanae in this round. Maria, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Maria.
Hawaii.
Hey, how are you? Welcome.
Baltimore. I'm good. Your guests and certainly your earlier callers have all made some very good points about, the fact that people like myself, I'm a registered Green, I'm disenfranchised from voting for the mayor. I don't get to vote in the primary, which obviously determines the mayoral race. And there are a lot of issues with the media. I mean, when I ran for governor last year, I could not get the Baltimore Brew even to cover me, which was a real disappointment. But what I want to focus on is my own experiences with these groups within Baltimore City that are aligned with the Democratic Party. And you all just mentioned BILD. And I don't think people realize groups like BILD and Bridge and Harbell up here on the Northeast, they actually do have a lot of power within their constituencies. And they routinely and deliberately shut out candidates like myself. I had an experience, and it wasn't my first one, with BILD last year, where they really did do basically a campaign rally for O'Malley, and it was BILD as a forum, but O'Malley was basically the only candidate guest. And I attempted before this to be included, and I did it the right way with phone calls and polite letters and whatnot, and was routinely denied. So I went down there with a lot of supporters, and they refused to allow. They were hostile,
okay,
and awful to me. Really, really ugly. And I attempted to get up and speak. There were 700 people there, and they needed to hear me speak. And I was drowned out by Bishop Miles leading We Shall Overcome, which was extraordinarily upsetting to me. But, you know, I want to make the point that, first of all, these groups have a lot of power. Candidates like us are routinely shut out. But, you know, and they say, well, this is a primary forum. And I say, okay, are you going to have a general election forum? Oh, yes, yes, we will. And then, of course, they never do. But I really want to make the point that, now, last year, I ran with my primary proposal being a state-owned and run bank like North Dakota's. And, you know, I couldn't get any traction from the media or anything on this. And, of course, in January, after the election, Jamie Raskin, State Senator Jamie Raskin, introduced a bill proposing just a study on just such a bank. You know, this is not a fringe idea. In 2007, I got 17% of the vote when I ran for city council president. I am not a fringe candidate, and yet the media, and I'm very upset to hear Mr. Robinson, some of his comments, really designates us in their own minds, and they convey that to their readers, that we are fringe candidates. And this goes for the Libertarians as well as the Greens. And I think that the media very unjustly portrays us in a certain way. And then, you know, it follows that voters really don't listen and ignore us.
All right, but let the media respond. You'd like to begin, Shirley, even though you weren't part of this. But go ahead.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think I was making the point earlier that, you know, even if you are an independent and you can vote for your candidate, is your candidate going to get any publicity? Are they going to get any coverage in the media? And I really, I mean, we are such a democratic city, and I don't know. I don't know that they would, because they aren't now.
So that,
sure.
And I think that the question that Maria raises is a genuine one. And I mean, Julie and then Mark, I mean, that do the major media kind of minimalize candidates who are green or libertarian, who are outside that Democratic-Republican forum? Often in these forums, they don't even want them to come in on debates.
Well, I think in this particular race that we're talking about, there really have not been a very well-organized campaigns that have reached out to me at the Baltimore Sun that are libertarian or green or Republican. I am aware of a Green Party candidate for the city council.
Bill Berry is running for city council against Curran.
And but you know, I think Maria makes a very interesting point, and I think that, you know, one thing that strikes those of us who follow Baltimore government closely is that you really see the effect of having a one party system here. And since we all recognize that Baltimore generally has a very liberal bent to it, mm-hmm. you would think that maybe the Green Party, that there would be more attention to the Green Party. You know, why don't we divide ourselves into liberal and more liberal Baltimoreans and have a two-party system in that regard? But yet you don't really quite see that happening. I feel like I know a fair number of people who are registered Green Party, just sort of friends of mine and socially, but I don't really necessarily see a larger structure emerging.
Mark, the brew was called out.
Yes, I don't know the circumstances of that, so I can't comment on that. We certainly, cover a wide range of people, and we do politics. It's basically a two-person operation, so we have to kind of decide what our priorities are. But that said, she raises a good point, and I just can't answer that. The specifics there.
So let me go into the caller here. But I think that one of the things I like to do in this election is actually have a Green Party conversation on the air with people who are Greens and see what they're thinking. Some of those who are running, some of those who are in it. One of those guys who's running is Bill Berry. He sent me an interesting article to read. He's running for city council, as I said, against against Bobby Curran. The article was about the Greens. And just as a quick aside, it was why the Greens are successful in Europe and why they're not successful in America. Because in Europe, they don't build themselves around elections. They organize and work on issues door-to-door as Greens and build their party, and then they win.
Interesting.
You have to organize to win. You can't just run Ralph Nader and win an election or anybody else. I think that's part of it. That'd be an interesting conversation. I will do that another day. We'll go to Troy in Baltimore County. You're on the air. Hi, Troy. You're on the air.
And we'll go to Troy.
Troy, I can hear my voice on the radio.
Yeah.
But
how you doing?
Yeah, go ahead.
How you doing?
Well, welcome.
Can you hear me?
We can now.
Can you hear me?
We can now.
Okay, yeah, how y'all doing, Mark Steiner?
Good.
Now, my opinion about this election was simply this. I knew a long time ago that this election turnout would be very low, and I base it partly on the Sheila Dixon incident. I think this election showed that the people of Baltimore City just want O'Malley out there fast. They believe he's too involved in what's going on. He done his 8 years, so leave us alone. I believe this was a direct response to we getting tired of him being in there fast. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Troy. I mean, we've heard a lot of that during the campaign, but the person who that was directed at, which was Stephanie Rawlings Blake, won.
Absolutely, she did. And with more than 50% of the vote.
52. Charles, we hadn't heard from you in a few minutes. You want to jump in?
Well, I did want to answer the young lady who's with the Green Party in that I not only have I participated in debates with Green candidates and had them on various airs and forums that I've had, one of the things that I think is very important is that we cannot be a party of one, and that means that you must have some constituents that, even if they don't vote for you, should say that I would consider voting for you.
But no, she said 17% of the people voted for her in
right.
the...
And I said earlier, I've had them on forums that I participated in, and to suggest that, you know, somehow they've been discounted, I think is really a travesty, because, you know, you got to have, if you know, when you get to the general election, everybody gets an opportunity to talk. But when you have these primaries, to give an example, I had one of the Republican candidates on, Vicky.
Vicky Hardy, who lost the primary.
Right. And, you know, and I listened to what she had to say, and I let the audience chime in. And I'm not saying that, you know, her message didn't resonate, but when you add up the numbers that she received and the guy who beat her, Nick Mosby, who beat her.
No, Nick Mosby ran for city council, who won.
Right.
Who beat Belinda Conaway.
Right, but those numbers don't add up.
Right.
I'm sorry, we're in a numbers game. And, you know, like it or not, you know, you have to count. And they determine winners not on passion, but on numbers.
All right. So do we have time for the call? We'd have to have one more call, and then we'll come back to our guests. Aaron, you're on the air.
Good evening, Marsh. How are you?
I'm well, Aaron. Welcome.
Well, you know, instead of having these elitist journalists like Mr. Robinson and others.
I'm not elitist, sir. I would disagree
with that, but if you say so.
Well, I can be elitist. We decide to have a journalist roundtable. They all represent different journalistic groups in the city.
No, they're still, in my view, elitist journalists.
Okay.
Be that as it may. The big problem, I think, is that those in the media who drew the race's foregone conclusion discouraged a lot of voters from getting out to vote. And the fact that it's come a day when depending on groups like the NAACP and Build to rally folks out to vote is over with, where grassroots groups have to spring up and do it themselves, because it's clear that these groups have self-interest to what I call the Democratic Party, not the Democratic Party anymore. They're the Democrats, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
And, you know, and they have ties to the O'Malley machine, which means if you want voter turnout, folks, you got to do it yourself, because God knows these machine types and these elitist media.
But, Aaron, wait, let me just jump in, because we know each other. I mean, you do have to get out the vote, and part of the problem is that none of the candidates running in this election, even with their small organizations, did the job of organizing voters to come out to vote. They didn't go out to register voters, line them up, bring them to the polls. That's how you win.
Yeah,
nobody did that.
I'm talking about groups outside of candidates. They have to spring up. I mean, little grassroots groups have to start organizing, because you can't depend on candidates or these so-called organizations to do it. You have to start your own groups and do it yourselves, because you can't depend on these candidates or these organizational groups or these elite media folks to do it.
Well, the media's job is not to get people to the polls.
No, but the media could help, and not discouraging folks in their in their media views with how much money each candidate's raised and all this, that, and the other, and this so-called inside baseball that the elite media likes to do.
All right, what do you think about that, Julie? And if somebody just wrote me a note across the screen saying, what about Otis Welly, who knocked on 45,000 doors? He did do that.
Well, I do hear this beef from folks a lot, and I find it very ironic because I personally am exhausted from months of, you know, giving politicians a hard time. Especially, I was at Stephanie Rawlings Blake's party last night, and a bunch of campaign people said to me, "Oh man, we really hate you." You know, I think if we're not, we are actually the people who are digging around and trying to do our best. Sure. But I do think that media in general across the country has been weakened in recent years, and
it's very
I'm
thin
seeing that
because yeah. I'm looking at it in terms of the Sun.
I was
and the, looking right. at it in terms of the Afro and Mark Reuter at the Brew. I mean that is you're down to a very thin core of people who are covering this election because the media does not put money into our political world for our citizens.
And I think if you want to stay informed these days, you have to really read a multiple news sources
right.
on a regular basis.
Julie Sharper, Baltimore Sun City Hall reporter. Shanae Williams, Baltimore Bureau reporter for the Afro-American. Mark Reuter, journalist of the Baltimore Brew. And Charles Robinson for Maryland Public Television. Thank you all so much for taking your time with us today. It's been great to have you here.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
And when we come back, we're going to look at the overwhelming numbers of people falling into poverty. Just spiked up. With more people falling into poverty in America. And what I will say to our two guests is that that's not even the half of it. Because if the poverty level is $22,000 for a family of four, try raising a family at $30,000 in a family of four. How many more millions of people live like that? We'll be right back. Stay with us.